You want to learn about aliens, extraterrestrials, UFOs, visitations, military abductions? Join Joe Metaldo on Wednesday night, 8 to 10 p.m. for his episodes of UFO Undercover.
You are invited to the Quantum Leap Let Light Unite show every Friday night on United Public Radio Network from 9 to 10 p.m. Pacific Time, 12 to 1 a.m. Eastern Time, with your spiritual warrior goddess, Kathy Bilski. Kathy will share all the old truths the Illuminati tries to keep secret. Kathy also gives you the opportunity to join in with planetary healing light work that will help us manifest World Enlightenment 2016. So let's get high and fly into new possibilities. So join Kathy every Friday night on UPRN, the Quantum Leap Let Light Unite show, a very powerful happening.
Come check out Christina George's new show, Paranormal Connections, only on United Public Radio, Monday, 8 to 10 p.m. See you Monday.
The UPRN family of shows would like to take a moment to thank our loyal listeners for tuning in to UPRNTalkRadio.com along with 107.7 FM New Orleans. Broadcasting on multiple platforms like Live 365, Ustream, and Shoutcast has made the UPRN the longest-running, highly rated, and best source of quality, unique programming that is not afraid of the status quo in alternative media. This station has a solid course of shows and hosts that refuse to get stuck in a rut or be overrun by a groupthink mentality, because station owner, host, and iCar founder Joe Montaldo knows the value of letting his talented stable of hosts grow uninhibited. In this genre, that's an accomplishment which many in alternative radio are striving for but are left consistently wanting. This is all made possible because of you, the listener, that tunes in live every night, who can tell the difference that independent thinking makes. The best way to show our appreciation is to thank you and continue to allow our listeners the ability to download the archives of all the shows free of charge on iTunes, Podbean, and SoundCloud. No monthly fees, no cost to download individual shows, and none of the constant hassling for donations. That's the UPRNradio.com difference. So stick around, there's much more to come with new shows on the way. For now, feel free to join your favorite show live in the Pal Talk chat room, easily accessible off UPRNTalkRadio.com, and share the experience of listening live with other listeners from around the world. So thanks for listening, and thank you for being a part of the UPRNTalkRadio.com family of listeners.
Hello, you're listening to United Public Radio. I'm Joe Montaldo, host of News on the Flip Side. Check us out every Saturday night, 6 to 9 p.m. Central Time.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Benetti, and you're listening to United Public Radio, UPRN 107.7 FM in New Orleans.
Hi, come check out Christina George's new show, Aliens, UFOs, and Beyond, Thursday night, 8 p.m. See you Thursday, Stephanie. Hi, I'm Joe Montaldo, and you're listening to United Public Radio. You want to learn about aliens, extraterrestrials, UFOs, visitations, military abductions? Join Joe Montaldo on Wednesday night, 8 to 10 p.m. for his episodes of UFO Undercover.
You are invited to the Quantum Leap Let Light Unite show every Friday night on United Public Radio Network from 9 to 10 p.m. Pacific Time, 12 to 1 a.m. Eastern Time, with your spiritual warrior goddess, Kathy Bilski. Kathy will share all the old truths the Illuminati tries to keep secret. Kathy also gives you the opportunity to join in with planetary healing light work that will help us manifest World Enlightenment 2016. So let's get high and fly into new possibilities. So join Kathy every Friday night on UPRN, the Quantum Leap Let Light Unite show, a very powerful happening. Aloha, everybody. This is Kathy Bilski, the Quantum Leap Let Light Unite show on UPRN Radio at uprn.radiostream321.com. And this is August 19th, 2016. Well, sorry about last week, guys. We just had a bunch of glitches and water, and I had a night off. Tonight, I'm going to have Judy Bellows on, and we're going to talk about Syria. And Judy just got back from Syria, and she's got some amazing stories to tell and a lot of truth that you just don't hear, you know, through normal TV, radio, and the normal news. Well, I want to say something really great. I'm going to give you an enlightenment moment. This is really breaking news. Poland became the 14th European nation to officially ban GMOs. Go, Poland! Now, continuing a trend of GMO bans sweeping across Europe, the nation of Poland has officially announced its decision to join 13 other nations so far in excluding Monsanto's controversial crops from its nation's farmland. The announcement came by Agencja Radiowa, a press agency working with Polski Radio in Poland, according to the article published by Radio Poland. Poland will now opt out of growing GMOs with a specific focus on Monsanto's genetically modified maize. Yeah, Monsanto, you are going down, which many countries fear will contaminate its natural crops if allowed to grow within their borders. Now, opposition to genetically engineered foods has been strong in Europe, you guys rock, for decades and has resulted in mass protests, including widespread participation in previous incarnations of the March Against Monsanto movement. So Poland joins, she's the 14th nation to exercise a ban on GMOs, joining Slovenia, Serbia, Croatia, Latvia, Italy, Germany, Scotland, Wales, Lithuania, Austria, Ireland, France, and Greece. Go, guys. That is really awesome. Like I said, Monsanto, you are just going down. Now, I've been given the opportunity to just kind of look over many, I mean, we've got Brazil, the Olympics going on, and yeah, I've seen a lot of athletes, and I'm going to throw out something at you, and I want you to listen with an open mind, and I'm going to be directing that at one particular group of athletes, but you know, the more I think about it, the more that it's going to apply to all athletes, okay? Now, how far do you go to get the best of your opponent? Black magic used in martial arts. Now, the world of sports is an interesting world where you are always trying to get one up on your adversary. I will refer to this as getting court advantage. All is fair in love and sports. The art of war is deception. Now, pay particular note of this last sentence. The art of war is deception. The world of martial arts is no exception. And how far does one go to win? You see it daily. Fighters are always undercutting their weight class for court advantage. And I ask you, does it work when everyone is doing it? And yes, it does give you a slight edge when your opponent does not. People have used steroids and drugs to get that court advantage until they get caught. And now it's illegal.
Now, that is something that is easy to catch now. That court advantage is gone. I have witnessed people turn people into the league unfairly for something that was blown out of proportion and untrue. It still got those people removed from the tournament. Remove your competitor that is favored to win and it will be easier for you, right? Fear of losing along with low self-esteem for yourself and your talents will get people doing whatever they can to win. And if you won like that, how can you take pride in that win? Well, if you're a sleazebag, it wouldn't matter, for you have no conscience anyway. Sportsmanship and morality go out the window. How much pride can you have with that kind of win? You win by sinking to new lows, and the world of the martial arts are impressed? No, I don't think so. Some people get court advantage by being Brazilian, and we're talking about Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And oh my God, I said it out loud. Now actually, it's a known fact. If there's a tie between a Brazilian and non-Brazilian, just who do you think the Brazilian judges are going to give the win to? Yeah, it is what is. Yet, you still can have a fair fight by being the better fighter and submissing your opponent. So let's talk about using black magic against your opponent for court advantage. It's done often, and you're probably saying, WTF, is she really is out there? Am I? Or am I speaking a truth that no one else has been able to see? That, my friends, is magic. And these people hide themselves in energy that makes them invisible. Well, until you come up against a white magician who dissolves that invisibility shield. And if you really are good, you can wreak havoc with your opponent, and they'll never have a clue. Big court advantage. I would say usually people find people that are adepts at the black arts to do magic against someone or them. Either way, this is immoral, and you're sinking to new lows. Really, if that is the only way you can win, then you suck as a fighter. And then you're going to be proud of your win, that you won through your fighting skills by unfair means. And this is dark and on a satanic level, period. And yeah, I said satanic, where black magicians will make blood sacrifices so you get that win. Your mind screwing your opponent on a new level, a dark level that will come back to you, which is what we call a karmic return. And I'm going to get to that in a bit. Now, what's it like to be under a spell? It can mess up your whole life. Some of the symptoms are you're in a daze and can't concentrate. You have mentally lost the fight before you began. Your stamina is gone. Fighting people who want to help you and family fighting, not being able to focus on your career, blowing off career opportunities due to being in a daze or you have an accident. If the black magicians are really good, they can break up your relationships, your jobs, hurt your animals, and do bodily harm.
We would kindly like
death.
To ask you to complete a short
yeah,
survey
guys,
because we are committed to improving
real.
The services that we offer
day,
to
so
our customers.
Why should the world
through
of
our
martial arts be any different? It's not. So what do you do to remove the curse? And, you know, this can act for anybody, guys. You know, you can all apply this, whether you're in martial arts or anywhere. Any doesn't matter. So I'm going to make it really simple, and every day you can do this for your family and friends. Okay, one, imagine yourself reconnecting to the Creator. Feel that divine energy flow down around you. Two, in your mind, simply peel off that dark energy, starting at the top of your head, and peel it down off your body, your feet, down your arms, out your hands, and imagine it going back to God. Three, call the violet flame through your body to transmute all that energy, transmuting it all to light. And four, let yourself be filled with the Creator's light. That's it. I mean, that's pretty simple, okay? Now, if you really want to get a little bit deeper, you can add this if you wish. If there is anyone out there that is directing any kind of dark energy at you through voodoo, black magic, dark witchcraft, or just angry thoughts, we ask their higher self to help them step forward in the light of God and stop doing any dark work. And if they choose to continue, which is their free will, I ask their higher self and guardian angel to put them in a position of harmlessness. We surround them in a bubble of mirror that faces them that's 2 inches from their nose. I put the violet flame in the bubble to transmute any of their dark energy so they have no forward movement. The bubble of mirror stays up 24/7, 365 days a year until they do works of good. Now, if this sounds weird, remember, you are dealing with magic. This short work will help you stay clear, and your fights are now about skill and nothing else. And if you don't do this, this act of not clearing yourself may just give your opponent that court advantage. So now let's address the cheaters and the black magicians that they use. Let me remind you about the law of karma. What you put out will come back to you. What goes around comes back around, and karmic return can and will be a bitch. I ask your higher self to help you step forward in the light of God and stop doing any dark work. If you choose to continue, which is your free will, I ask your higher self and guardian angel to put you in a position of harmlessness. We surround you in a bubble of mirror that faces you and is 2 inches from your nose. I add the violet flame to the bubble of mirror to transmute any of your dark energy so you have no forward movement. The bubble of mirror stays up 24/7, 365 days a year until you do works of good. If it's for your highest good, I'm also asking that your karma comes back to you for your deeds, your misdeeds, 10,000-fold, and I step out of the way as it's returned to you. You know, it kind of sucks to be you right now. And by the way, don't direct any dark energy my way or at my family for exposing your magic, for the karma will be returned. The karma return will be over 100,000-fold. You know, ouch. I'm just saying. And I also don't stand alone. I have many friends who work with energy, too. But, of course, we just use it for the benefit of humanity. So it's time for you to clean up your fights, to clean up your, just what you do in any athlete or any part of your life. And I'm not saying for those that are in the martial arts that you can't work with energy. The great fighters do. They just keep it to the tournament. And as far as I'm concerned, may the best fighter win through skill, courage, tenacity, determination, and not black magic. So welcome, Judy, to the show. Thank you so much for having patience.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here, and it's very interesting to hear what you're talking about.
Great. I'm glad I didn't bore you with that. If I can add real quick, guys, I got to go swimming with dolphins, on a more lighter note, yesterday, and I did was my first dolphin video, and it's about 4 minutes long. It's up on YouTube. Check me out under Kathy Bilski. And, oh, my God, you can hear them talk, and at the end, you know, you're going to hear me ohm. I'm a little out of shape, and it's really a bad ohm, but it's the best I could do. And at the end, you know, I was doing my last ohm, and as they're going away, they sound like they were laughing at me. I mean, it was just too funny. All right. Okay. All right. I'm done. All right. Now we're going to get to something more serious. Are you ready?
I'm ready. I'm here. I'm muted. I'm muting because I have a snoring pug next to me. So.
Oh, okay. Well, you went to Syria, you were on a peacekeeping mission, and I think it was absolutely incredible. What possessed you and the group that you went with to go to Syria?
Well, people have been very divided about in their understanding of what's happening in Syria right now. And a lot of people are very strongly under the influence of sort of government propaganda here in the United States about the situation there. So we decided to go over there and talk to some people and try and find out what's really going on in Syria.
Well, they're making the president, oh my God, what's his name?
His name is Bashar Assad.
Yeah, thank you. President Assad sounds such like a bad guy. And what you actually found was that he was doing everything to help his people, and he wanted to end war, and you got to correct me if I'm getting this wrong, and he wants
reconciliation.
Thank you. Yes, and that is amazing.
I think so, too. I had long felt through my experience with Syria prior to the war that I didn't believe what they were saying about the president. I didn't think that he would really be attacking the people. I do think that bad things happen in wars, and that when you have a war going on inside your country, people are getting hurt. But I was really impressed by the discussion with the opposition that had joined the government out of loyalty to their country when they saw that there was a war that was against all of the people of Syria. And I was impressed by the discussion of reconciliation, and I heard it from people on all sides, which really impressed me and made me feel like if they were allowed to resolve the problem themselves, and if all the foreigners withdrew their forces, that Syria could find a favorable resolution for this terrible war that's been going on.
You know what it sounds like? You guys are being attacked for telling the truth.
Yeah, and that has happened. That's exactly what happened.
And do you remember when we were going to, Iraq or Iran, which I get them mixed up, and Scott Ritter went to check to see whether or not they had nuclear weapons, and he came back and said they didn't, and the government just did a smear campaign on this because they wanted him to say the opposite, and he told the truth.
Yes, I know, and I've met Scott, and I think he's really a fine person. So it's very sad what they did to him over trying to keep him from telling the truth. But I think somewhere it's in the nature of, the government in this country isn't very well connected to the people anymore. It's really no longer, I don't think our democracy is very strong at the moment. And so the government works really hard to keep the truth from us on all fronts, and the thing that happened to Scott was just, I don't know, just horrible. I mean, they really made it, they destroyed his personal life as well as his public life.
They went after him, and he wrote a book, which I read, and I did an outline on. Oh, maybe you can help me get him on my radio show. I really, really would love to do that. I really think so highly of him. But he wrote a book on how to take the art of war for, the anti-war movement. And it blew me away. It blew me away. There were some parts in it I had a hard time understanding because it's not of my thought. But then it's like, Odessa? No, that's not Odessa. The Oda Loop. Okay. I'm reading the Oda Loop, and I'm going, oh, my God, this is too much for my brain to handle. I'm going to skip this. And the next paragraph, he writes, if you don't get this, you're not going to get anything. And it was like, oh, God. So I literally had to put the book down and, leave it for a couple of days and then go back with a different mindset because I know I've got to learn it.
Yeah.
So, I honor him, and I really wish more anti-war people, and this is my would actually follow some of his suggestions. They might get somewhere because they aren't getting anywhere with their modalities right now.
Well, I think that right now the level of propaganda in this country is so overwhelming in the mainstream news that people are basically, you have to work to know the truth. If you just go along, you're going to be stuck in the lies. And people like Scott, he came from a military background. And I have to say, I know some groups that can function without an authoritarian setup, without a leader, without, and just through consensus. And it's hard work, and it's something you have to learn to be good friends to do. But for a larger movement with a lot more people, you do what Scott did is he applied some of his military training to it about, you know, on the level of getting things done. And right now what's happened, though, is that from the standpoint of ideas, people are arguing about what is or isn't the truth, which is one of the reasons why we felt so it was so important to go over and talk to people in Syria. Because when you're, you know, I mean, it takes you back to, you know, when I was in college a long time ago, and, you know, we would, like, take some drugs and then sit around outside and try and figure out whether there were cows in the field across the street or not. You know, obviously, if you could walk across the street into the field, you could know whether or not there are cows there instead of sitting around and arguing about it.
You went, if I could, you know, a lot of people hear about refugee camps, and, you know, I think you're in America, you're privileged, you don't go through that. How can you relate? Can you describe what a refugee camp is like, and what would be a typical day for someone who is a refugee? What would their day be like?
Well, I want to say that there's different refugee camps in different places. So the ones that are inside Syria, they're all in buildings. I thought it was one of the interesting things, actually, that the president said when we spoke to him was that he decided, after looking at the refugee camps in Iraq and the ones in Turkey, that he was not going to house anybody in a tent because it was just an unlivable situation. So they took schools and, you know, buildings, and they, you know, refurbished them to some degree so that people could live there and have enough bathrooms or whatever and rooms to stay in, and so that people could actually have a place to stay. But refugees, it's a terrible, sad life, whether you're in a relatively comfortable place in your own country or if you're stranded in a foreign country in a tent, because everything that you know and that's familiar to you is gone, and you have to live. I remember my friend Linda knew some refugees from Syria who were in Turkey, in Istanbul, and the woman wrote to Linda and said, "I cry every day. I go out to the store, and the people aren't speaking my language. And I don't have enough money to buy the kind of food that I used to buy for my children, and I don't know if I can ever go home again." And even the people that are still inside Syria have those fears. The city of Aleppo, the one that we're hearing about right now, there are a couple of 100,000 people living in East Aleppo, which is under occupation by an Al-Qaeda force. They call themselves Al-Nusra, but they're actually Al-Qaeda. And then the rest of the city, 1.5 million people live there. And throughout the city, no one is truly safe. In the area that's under occupation, they've been fighting with the army, and they've been shelling the more heavily inhabited part of the city where there's a lot of civilians still living in their homes and their neighborhoods. And so inside this area, there's very few civilians. And a lot of the buildings have been knocked down and destroyed. And so when people look, even in Syria, they mostly try to evacuate an area before the big fight begins. And so some people may not be able to get out. The militants may not allow them to leave, or they might stubbornly stay in their house even though they know there's going to be the war is coming to their block, or maybe they just something happened and they couldn't get out. So there are a few civilians there, but not a real lot. Most of them are the fighters and their families. And so when the fighting starts, though, they flatten a lot of buildings. And so on. And so the people that used to live there that are now in a refugee camp, they might see on the news their home that's, you know, completely destroyed. And they might see that their neighbor was killed or that their neighbors were killed. And everyone I talk to, civilian, government, religious people, everybody I talk to in Damascus had a family member who'd been killed in the war or a loved one. And many of them, the officials, often the loved one who died was assassinated on purpose to hurt them. But a lot of other people, like journalists, talk about trying to escape from the militants. Christians, they would come into Christian towns and slaughter the people. And a few people might escape, but the ones that couldn't get out, that had young children or were older, would just be killed. Alawite towns.
Now, at this, Syria was a country where all religions were accepted. It was secular. And
right.
Can you, and I don't know if you can answer the question, but why in the hell are we there? Why are we interfering? What's in it for the U.S. government?
Well, I have a few theories. One is that it protects Israel for the U.S. to be there, because Syria has been a link between Iran and Lebanon, which, again, Israel kind of covets Lebanon, and they're hoping it'll collapse, so, because they occupied it for most of the 80s and finally got thrown out. And so they would like to, you know, occupy it again. And so to destroy Syria would keep them, these countries that the U.S. doesn't really like and that live their own lives and don't do whatever they're told, and it would keep them from forming the links to have their own sort of power base. So they wanted to have their own oil pipeline that went from Iran to Iraq to Syria and then out into the ocean, maybe through Lebanon or offshore of Syria. They both have long areas along the seafront. And the United States wanted to have a pipeline from its friends in Saudi Arabia and Qatar that would go through Syria into Turkey and out through Turkey. And so essentially, if Iran and its friends got the pipeline, then these countries would have their own, they would be able to take care of themselves pretty well. So that is, I think, one of the reasons that the U.S. doesn't want any regional power. You know, they don't want China to have sway over its neighbors in Asia. They don't want Russia to have sway over its neighbors in the Middle East, in the Eastern Europe. They want everyone to answer only to the United States. And I don't think everybody in the United States feels that way. And I don't think most people do. I don't think even everyone in the government feels that way. But I think there's a strong current of that thinking in our government, because they think that the only way they can sort of be the exceptional nation, and that's what they want to be, is to make sure that nobody else has any power.
God, I think you call that the one world government, and it's like the United States is the one who goes down. You know, they got the army, they're the muscle.
Right.
And you know, I think that's just overstepping their boundaries just a tad. A military gone wild.
Yeah, I think it's terrible. And I fear for the United States, because these other countries, like, there are a lot of people in China and India and Brazil and, you know, in all these other countries in the rest of the world, and they're not going to forever allow, you know, the Americans to keep their boot, so to speak, on their throat. And why should they have to? Why do we need to be a bully? I don't want to be a bully. And most Americans, I don't think we really want to be a bully. And certainly, in terms of economic well-being, there might be a short-term benefit to, you know, having all the power. But ultimately, there's so much wealth in the world at large. There's enough for everybody, but we're destroying it.
But I think the Rothschilds have it all.
Yeah, well, but see, there are things the Rothschilds can destroy, but they can't have it. They can't have all the wonderful grain-growing areas in Russia. They can't have all the, you know, cultural, fascinating cultural things that are happening in some of these countries. They can't have, you know, the joy that people feel by spending time together and learning about one another's lives and cultures. They can destroy it, but they can't have it. And what they've done, I think, really is, in a sense, akin to black magic. You use that term. And I think most of us know the old story of King Midas. I guess it's a Greek myth. I learned it when I was a child. But King Midas, he got the Midas touch. That was his wish, so that everything he touched would turn to gold. And in the end, he touched his daughter by accident and turned her to gold. And then he didn't have a daughter anymore. And I think that in some ways, the United States is participating in a scheme like that. That's the Rothschild scheme, is to take the food out of other people's mouths and turn it into, you know, leverage or money or something that has no value in real terms. And when you talk about Monsanto, again, they're manipulating and risking the lives of millions and billions of people that populate the earth, and the only thing they have to gain by it is like a number on a stock.
God, let's talk about really, you know, about being greedy. You know, this crazy ass Pokemon game phenomenon that's going around.
Yeah, I've seen it.
I don't play it, but Japan government's got together with the people that put the Pokemon together, and they, to draw tourists, they are putting a Pokemon as Fukushima. I mean, how mentally insane and sick is that?
That is, and dangerous.
Oh, my God. Yeah, way beyond. I mean, good grief. You know, oh, my God. I read that, and it's, I don't believe any country should be invaded except Japan. They've lost their right to rule. You know, they're killing the world with their letting the radiation go from Fukushima.
Well, and the sad thing is that those areas were built by U.S. and European companies according to U.S. and European designs. And so once again, the money men, the Rothschilds and the American corporations, have done something that destroys the lives of ordinary people, and they've left the cleanup to Japan, who has sort of a puppet government that responds to that central one world government and not to their own people. I mean, think of the poor people of Japan. You know, here they got, you know, this radiation going all over the place, and their government saying, oh, no, you can just sit there a little longer. Don't move. Just don't do anything. It's going to be okay. You know, I mean, it's horrible. That's, you know, you can never imagine people behaving that way.
Well, it's, from my understanding, the Yakuza run it. Yeah, it's totally mafia run, especially the cleanup from Fukushima.
Yeah.
And again, the government is allowing it. So they're in bed, and you're right, they're in the one world government, and, you know, they don't care. They're killing their own people. They're killing their own families. And this is reptilian, and they're not even, you know, no compassion, no emotion, nothing.
Well, you know, the United States government, the first time that, or the, maybe not the first time, but one of the first times that they tested a nuclear weapon, had the whole military contingent nearby come out and sit in a circle and watch this nuclear bomb be exploded in the air somewhere out in the western desert. And
pretty sure it was Nevada.
Yeah, and they all ended up, you know, I mean, they were, killed them. I mean, eventually it would kill them of cancer, just the same as it would kill the people in Japan with cancer.
And the people that were also there, I mean, they were watching it and having barbecues while they were watching the bomb go off.
Yeah,
And then you have, you know, for what happened with Fukushima, our military sent in a ship to Japan, and all those guys got nuked. And our government has turned a blind eye to their radiation sickness.
Yeah. Well, they turned a blind eye to Agent Orange sickness and the guys that came back from Vietnam. They turned a blind eye to the radiation sickness of the guys from the first Iraq War, who got doused with depleted uranium equipment. And governments do not care about people. In Syria, you know, the war is, you know, the United States has largely been the main provider of weapons to the militants that are attacking Syria. And just large dumps of weapons to Al-Qaeda-type groups and all kinds of groups. And all the while they're, you know, insisting that the government, the real government of a real country, step down. What sensible government would do that? You know, they took responsibility and stayed. But
our government is no longer sensible. It never has been.
No. Well, I think something has to change, because it seems like somehow colonialism, when it got to the United States, turned into genocide. You know, starting with really the Native Americans. And since then, and there was a genocide of the Native population of Australia as well. And, you know, somehow all of this has to be faced before, you know, it can be stopped. Somehow people have to face the reality of what, you know, of what's happening and say, all right, that's it. As long as people deny it and look away, then it can't be changed.
Well, I have a lot of Native American Indians on my show, and they all say the same thing. We are invisible. Nobody sees us, out of sight, out of mind. And that's true. You know, if it has nothing to do with your life, why would you focus on it?
Yeah, well, this bunch of poor people, you know.
Yes. That take care of the land and care about the earth, you know, bad, bad people.
Yeah. Yeah, not progressive.
What kind of sanctions have the U.S. and U.N. put on Syria, and what are the effects?
Well, they put sanctions on, they keep Syria for one thing, out of the international banking system, which means that, so here we have, you know, Syria has to take care of the people that are there as best it can, so their factories and things like that have to operate. So some of them have been bombed and destroyed by the militants, and others, they can't get raw materials to make things out of, to make basic medications or, say, canned foods or whatever it is they make, clothing.
Why does that sound like Palestine?
Yeah, and they also, it's right next to Palestine, and really historically Palestine and Syria and Lebanon and the place where Israel is planted right now were all basically one community. For a very long time, they have a very close, the native people of those areas have a very close cultural connection, and now they're all under attack. And so these factories, they can't get raw materials. They can't get their machinery fixed. So say they buy a big fancy machine from Europe a few years ago, 10 years ago, whatever, and, you know, maybe it breaks now, maybe it got bombed and they need a new one, they can't get a new one. If, you know, a lot of fancy machinery like that in factories, it needs the producer to come once a year and sort of maintain it, but they can't get anyone to come and maintain them anymore because they don't have no way to pay for it because they can't go through the banking system. So they also have been denied access to medications, to cancer medications, and to fancy medical technology like machines and things again, because they have doctors that are well trained, but what they don't have is like the machinery and something basic that I thought was very odd, because we did ask them. I brought a bunch of medical supplies when I went. I filled two, like, 30-inch suitcases and brought them over with real basic stuff, which turned out to be helpful, like, sanitary stuff, stuff to for the doctors to scrub with or to clean wounds and things, and bandages, and a few things, like, for helping people in emergencies, to help them breathe or whatever. But anyway, we asked them what they needed, and they said, we need cancer drugs, and we need dialysis filters. And I'm like, dialysis filters? You know, they can't get dialysis filters. Is that bizarre or what? How many people, people with kidney disease, you know, who need dialysis, they die if they don't get it, you know. And there's a lot of basic medications. They're having trouble. Even through the United Nations, they're having trouble getting stuff to inoculate the children from diseases, so they can't. So they could have easily. So far, it hasn't happened, and I think it speaks very highly of the Syrian government that it hasn't happened, because they could have a terrible illness spread through the country like wildfire, like in Haiti. Because they have been unable to vaccinate the children for the last 5 years. So they have a lot of high risk. Also, their lawyers got kicked out of the International Bar Association. So if they wanted to, say, go to the international court and complain about what's going on, they no longer have international standing. So their students can't do exchanges anymore. They can't go to conferences. Their students and faculty from the universities. They're just, everybody in Syria is like isolated from the world by these sanctions.
How evil.
Yes, it's a terrible thing. And who does that hurt? Does that hurt the government?
Absolutely not.
This
is all part of Agenda 21, where they're trying to get rid of the world population.
Yeah, I guess that could be. That's, you know, a lot of this is happening. Actually, it's kind of interesting with the whole terrorist thing. The United States keeps saying it's fighting terrorists, but almost every major terrorist organization started out as some kind of a U.S. project. And in some cases, and several that I can think of, the country that helped the U.S. is ended up being the biggest victim in it. So Pakistan, for instance, helped the United States under Zia-ul-Haq to build Al-Qaeda. And now in Waziristan, they have all kinds of problems with Taliban and Al-Qaeda people attacking Pakistan. And then, the United States is attacking them too. And in Turkey has done the same thing with Al-Qaeda that's in Syria, which is that they had the training camps there for ISIS and for other terrorist groups, Al-Nusra. And so if these fighters, when these fighters get pushed out of Syria completely and out of Iraq, they will be going back through Turkey. And it's poisoned their own, you know, Erdogan has poisoned his own country this way. And the other example is Boko Haram in Africa. They started, I think, in Nigeria, and now Nigeria's, nobody, you know, in France, 10 people die and everybody's bleeding all over the place, and I am France, you know, I am this or I am that, but hundreds of people at a time get killed by car bombs and suicide bombers and things like that in Nigeria, and it happens regularly. And the people
That's where Joseph Kony is, isn't he?
I don't know where Kony is, but this is Boko Haram. they abducted those that whole bunch of teenage girls from a school, and they're still like dragging them out once in a while to you know, just to distress the people, but they won't give them back.
I really believe that that part of the world, especially with Joseph Kony, that that's one of the largest pedophile rings on the planet. And that's why nobody wants to touch him, because he supplies all the Satanists with all the children that they need.
Well, that's horrible. That's horrible. But the United States, again, initially, they needed a fighting force that was, you know, under the, you know, in the shadows, so to speak. And I think this was actually in the movie that Jeremy Scahill made, Dirty Wars. He went down and talked to these people, and, you know, Boko Haram, a lot of them were guys that were recruited by the United States to fight against their governments, just like they're recruiting people in Syria to fight against their government to create turmoil, basically. And because if there's turmoil, then outsiders can take control.
Out of the out of chaos comes order.
Yeah, I think so, and I think this is a mistaken thing, though, because what's happening is that no matter how hard they try, sooner or later somebody stands up to them. So they got rid of Saddam Hussein, who was just an American puppet anyway, and they got rid of Gaddafi basically because there was no real established national feeling in Libya before he came. But in Syria, they're not having much luck getting rid of the government there, because Syria has been an independent country for many, many years, for 100 years. You know, they try, and the West has repeatedly tried to put in puppet governments, and they've been kicked out every time. And Damascus was, I guess, the second center of the Islamic empire. The first one was in, in Arabia. But Damascus was the second center for, like, I don't know, 100 or 200 years of the Islamic Empire. Before that, it was a big center in the Roman Empire. Before that, it was a big center in, you know, it's just been sort of a PowerPoint and a center of civilization. These Aleppo and Damascus are among the two oldest, most long inhabited cities in the entire world. And they have an identity. That's what's happening with Iran, too, why United States can't really shake them, no matter how badly they treat them. Iran was the empire 1,000 years ago, in 2,000 years, 2,500 years ago. You know, they were the main empire in the region. And they have a strong identity as a people. And
That, don't you believe that's why so many of their artifacts have been stolen? Because they, you know, were so incredible, and their history goes back so far. And
yes.
If you want to control history, you get rid of the old history and you wipe it out. And all their stuff, you know, that their artifacts goes in private collections.
Yep, and they still have some, though. I'll tell you, I was in a museum in Tehran. I couldn't believe it. They have piles, and I do mean piles, of jewels, of diamonds and rubies and emeralds. They have, like, the scabbards from the swords of emperors, you know, of long ago, that are just crusted with jewels. They have the stuff that didn't make it to the London Museum is still in Tehran.
You mean what London didn't steal?
Yeah, they have these beautiful things carved out of, like, semi-precious stones, and that are just really fancy carvings, but they're made out of things that nowadays you can, you know, an expensive little ring has one in it. It's very amazing what they still have left of their history, enough so that people can come there and really feel like, yes, I'm a part of civilization. Those Americans have been around for 250 years. you know, and everything we have is made out of wood. And if you're a Native American, that works just fine because all of nature is your home. But for the rest of us, it's pretty flimsy compared to what you see in all over the Middle East. But I think the Middle East and Iran, they have everybody's history there. This is the history of civilization, you know, not just the history of the people who live there. And when our governments and armies destroy it and steal it, they're destroying all of our history. And that is indeed a sad thing. You know, there's no way to, you know, you create a generation with no history.
They are no different than what was the Taliban that went and busted up all those huge, huge Buddha statues that were really, really old. You know, we're no different. Rape, pillage, plunder. You know, mothers and fathers, why in the hell do you allow your kids to go into the military? I mean, honest to God, you are not doing your job.
I agree, and I think, you know, though I'm not, you know, and so, to some degree, I'm not going to 100% criticize, because during the Iraq War, when we used to come out and protest, we used to have a peace parade that was allowed to follow the Memorial Day parade, and there's this backdoor draft of poor people, basically, and black people, and, you know, Latino people, and people who have no other opportunities in the mainstream society or limited opportunities. And so we would walk down, like, in the nice part of town, going into the middle of downtown where the more well-off people and mostly white people live, and they would, like, snub us, and they wouldn't, like, take a flag or a piece of candy from us. And then when we got into the part of the city where the black folks live and where the every family has somebody fighting in Iraq, this is back in 2005 and 6, they would cheer when we came by because they knew that they were paying the price for other people's, you know, crimes, shall we say. And I was always impressed by that. We would come into the other side of town. I marched in a parade once dressed as George Bush with a mask so that no one knew who I was. And I had like blood spattered all over my costume and stuff. And we got cheered all the way through the poor part of town. But in the rich part of town, people were turning their backs on us. They were upset. They just, you know, sometimes when you benefit from a truth, you don't realize how, or from a lie, you don't realize how much bias you have towards it. And it's so hard to break through that, especially when the press right now is so completely co-opted.
Well, that's true. Thank God for alternative news. We've got 1 minute left. If people want, can people volunteer? How can they get a hold of you?
Well, my blog is the Deconstructed Globe, deconstructedglobe.com, and you can communicate with me through there, and I'll check and make sure my email address is on the About page. That's the easiest way to find me. Anything else would be hard to spell. So deconstructedglobe.com, that's where I write and where I, you know, You can comment on anything I write and have a conversation. I haven't killed the comment section or anything. And find my email address. And also, upstatedroneaction.org is another website, again, where I'm the administrator. You can reach me by writing to the administrator. And you can read about the anti-drone work that's going on and has been for some time on the mainland, where we have drone bases in practically every National Guard base right now.
Yeah, you're really a big drone activist, too. You know, you're awesome, woman.
Well, thank you, and so are you. I love what you're doing with your radio show. So.
Oh, you can keep stroking me. Thank you.
We got to be nice to each other.
Yes, we do. We have enough hardship.
really.
What's going on? Oh, my God. I really am greatly appreciative that you came on the show, and I think you really got out some good information tonight about Siri and what it's really like. And again, if you want to get a hold of Judy and talk to her more about it, maybe she can make some suggestions on how you can actually take some action. And you can write to her at
JB at deconstructedglobe.com.
Spell that.
JB at deconstructedglobe, deconstructed globe.com. That's my easiest email address. I mean, easiest to spell.
So where do you go from here?
Where do I go? Well, I'm like just going to probably spend quite a while for now spinning out the results of this trip and trying to share the information that we received. A lot of it, I have like some recorded information that I haven't even had a chance to transcribe, much less publish something about it. And, the drone thing is going on all over the country, and sometimes I work on publicizing that. And we'll see what trip turns up next. Who knows? I've got to save my pennies before I can go anywhere again.
Oh, I understand that. But gosh, when you do go on your working vacations, they're pretty incredible. And you definitely are into what I call selfless service.
Well, thank you. I really would like to see a better world for all of us and for our children.
Oh, I'm so there with you. Yeah. And I even have great-grandchildren. Oh, my God.
Do you? Oh, my goodness. Well, I have a friend, actually. This is not for the radio, but I have a friend that I'd love to introduce you to, has many similar interests.
Absolutely. We'll talk after.
Yes, great. Thanks.
Well, aloha, everybody. Have a really great week. Listen to everything with an open mind. Don't believe everything you hear. And I guess I'm sure you don't, else you wouldn't be listening to my program. enjoy life. No matter what you're going through, find a way to connect with nature. Even to look at the stars, hug a tree. It'll bring you joy. And on that note, all right, aloha.